Hello, I hope that you have had a lovely day so far. I did not have an intention of recording a video today because I had just posted the Biblical Femininity and Problem with College video yesterday, and I have enjoyed reading through your comments and testimonies and feedback, and I will hopefully, by the time this video is uploaded, I'll have responded to them, but it's been nice. Thank you so much for your feedback on that video. It was, for the most part, very positive, which has been very encouraging. I also think it's helpful for viewers to see positive testimonies in the comments. So for those of you that take the time to write a comment out and give feedback, it's very kind of you. And there has been just a few, I don't even know if I would call it pushbacks, but just different angles, different perspectives given. That's why I'm sitting down and doing this video, is because I thought it would be easier to process my thoughts in video. This is, if I were to go and get coffee with you at a coffee shop, this is probably what I would share with you, because I think sometimes comment sections can feel contentious because you can't hear the tone in which things are said. But I've just been thinking about the whole sending girls to college thing, and obviously there's exceptions. I think I said that in that video, that there are times when some things come up and you have to go work, or someone has to go and get a certificate, piece of paper from a college institution. And so obviously, to everything that I'm saying, I am making generalizations, because generally this is where our culture is today. And you can just look around and see that this is the popular mainstream way that things are going. And I don't think it's in our young ladies' best interest to keep going down this route without talking about the consequences of it. I also think that whenever I talk about college, or even about getting married young and having children young, I think for some there is a tinge of hurt that comes, and I never want to make you feel bad for the circumstances that you're in. At the same time, I do think sometimes we need a wake-up revelation of the circumstances that we're in so we can change them, to hopefully make adjustments in our life and pray and start asking the Holy Spirit about what moves we can make, where He would like us to be, so that way we can place ourselves in a position to receive the desires of our heart. Instead of just going through the motions, hoping that things will just someday work out, we can then start praying and asking God to help us and direct our steps, that we don't have to just go along with what culture has told us to go along with, what popular culture has told us to go along with. Maybe we can start praying for a different way. And I think that's what else I've been reflecting on with the whole going to college thing, and the pushback of, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? And I'm like, are we as Christians just not wanting to live a life of dependence upon the Lord? Do we not trust that He will come through for us? Like, that is the testimony. And that's what I want to encourage with you today. I'm going to share my life after college, what I did, because everything that I did after university, you could do without going to university this day and age. You do not need to go to university for any of the things that I did after school, where I ended up meeting my husband, because oftentimes the pushback is, well, at least with Christian education, you go and you can meet a husband there. So I'll share all the things I did. And then I also want to make a note that we had an email once from a young girl that said her father really wanted her to go to this Christian college who was going to pay for the whole thing. And he really wanted her to go there, but she didn't want to go to college, so she was struggling with what to do. And Scott and I, we got the email, we ruminated on it for a few days and prayed, and we thought, well, I think the biblical feedback to give her is to obey her father. She is within her father's household, and he's willing to pay for it. And when we're not yet married, we are still to be submissive to our fathers, because our fathers usually have the best interest in mind. If you are in a Christian household that's healthy and good, your fathers will have your best interest in mind. And so If he wants you to go to college, that would be the honorable, godly, biblical thing to do, would be then to go to college. Obviously, it's fine for you to process and talk to him about other options, because maybe for your dad, he just has never thought about another option for you. And if you mentioned another option of something you'd be interested in, he would be open to it. And so she had done that, I believe, if I remember right from the email, she did bring it up to him, and he was very firm on her wanting to go to college. And so our feedback was, well, honor him, go to college, but go with your intention being that you want to be a wife and a mom. Because if you go into college with that being your intention, then you're not going to be moved or swayed by the ways of college. You're not going to be brainwashed by socialism or brainwashed by liberalism that marriage is a burden, children are a burden, but rather go as a super feminine, beautiful girl, place yourself in positions around the high status young men on campus, and get them to like you and marry one of them. That's a great option. If that's the way you want to do college, I think that that is a great option. And yeah, it can be done well. So if you're going to go to college, then have that as your intention. Keep that as the forefront of your mind. Another comment said that she came from an abusive home, so that was her only way of getting out of an abusive home, was to go to college. It was paid for, so she didn't go into debt. And again, there's exceptions to everything. If you are in an abusive home, it is for your best interest to get out of that abusive space. And if college is the only way to make that happen, then yeah, go to college, but then again, keep the intention in mind of why you're there, what your focus is, who you want to be. Do you want to be a wife and a mom? Then don't get distracted with the other things. And then there was a comment that said something like, well, the option is either go to college or go work at Burger King. And that is where we're going to talk about today, because that's just not true. If you don't go to college, you're not going to end up working at Burger King. Not at today's day and age. I mean, if you want to work at Burger King, you're more than welcome to, but there are an abundance of options of things to do. So for Scott and I, whenever we've been in a season, and this I did when I was in my single years, which I will get into, but I want to start out with this because I think it's very helpful. No matter the season of life you're in, what Scott and I always do when we feel like we are at a crossroads in our life and we need to make a change, we make a list of 5 options. What are 5 things that we could possibly do? And then we start praying about those things. And the last time we did that, we could only come up with 4 things. So we're like, okay, well, clearly we cannot come up with a 5th thing that would be enjoyable, so we're going to leave room for the Holy Spirit. And Holy Spirit, if we cannot think of one of the things that you want us to do, will you direct our steps to that thing? And that was 2 years ago when we moved, and we made that list on July 4th. I remember we were at this little country lake restaurant writing our list down, and within 2 or 3 weeks, we got a phone call, and Scott got this opportunity, and that's why we ended up moving. I do think that it was the Holy Spirit directing our steps, almost preparing our hearts for that phone call of, okay, when this phone call happens, you know it's going to be from me, because you just left room for me to work in your life. And so opportunity knocks, and that was the 5th thing. And so that is something that you can do as a high schooler. If you're trying to figure out what you want to do, what are things that interest you? This is the blessing of having parents who are very involved, who know you, who know what you're good at. They can help you process things of, if I could do anything, what could I do? And there are so many options out there today of things that you could do. Is there a family friend who has a business that you could work for? You could do administrative stuff for, you could do any type of work for them. I have a friend and she did that. She worked for family friend's business and she ended up marrying the owner's son, and they have a beautiful family today, and praise God. Is there a camp nearby or something where you can live at home, an activity thing of what you could do? There are summer camps galore in the summer if you want to work at a summer camp. I have another friend who worked at a summer camp, and that is where she ended up meeting her husband. So I'm just throwing out options. There are so many things in today's world that you could be doing that you wouldn't necessarily have to go to college to meet your husband or to make an income. You can still make money without having to work at Burger King if you don't want to work at Burger King, if you don't want to work at any fast food place. You could work at a gym, and you never know if you'd meet your future husband there. You could work as a waitress and serving. You never know if you could meet your husband there. And so, with my story, what I did after college, I went to school for graphic design. I ended up getting a job at a seminary as a graphic designer. And again, in today's day and age, you do not need to go to college to do graphic design work. There is an abundance of online tutorials that will teach you. You can learn the Adobe Suite online for free from YouTube videos, or if you wanted to pay money for courses, you could do that. And there is just an abundance of opportunities with graphic design. And what a lot of places are looking for is a portfolio to show that you can actually do the work. That's what people like this day and age. So for my first year and a half after college, I worked at a seminary as a graphic designer, and I hated it. I cried so much going to work because I worked in a basement. It was dark. I was staring at a computer screen all day. I lived in 30 minutes away from where I worked. I just didn't enjoy it. It didn't feel like life-giving to me. And I remember thinking like, is this really what I'm gonna do for the rest of my life? This is terrible. At my about year and 2 month mark of being there, I was like, okay, I have to do something. I cannot stay here. And so an opportunity came up that my sister and I were interested in going to a mission school. And we looked into one that was 8 months, and we seriously considered that one. I think it was 8 months. It was longer. I don't know how long. Maybe 10 months. I don't know. I think it was from August until May. So that was an option. But then we found out that they were opening up a 6-week school, and that then stood out to us. So we ended up applying, got accepted to this mission school in Lake Tahoe, California, and quit my job. Both of us, we both quit our jobs and we went to this mission school in California. Even though this mission school was only 6 weeks, we both still quit our jobs because I didn't want to go back to where I was. And I remember my boss, I was very good friends with her. She was kind of like a mentor to me, and she told me, you know, I probably could hold the space for you, but I think that God has something else for you, and I don't think it's best for you to come back here after the mission school's over. And so we quit our jobs. It was terrifying. It was so scary. Here I was doing the thing that I went to college for, and now I'm quitting it after a year and a half to go to a mission school across the country that's only 6 weeks long. And it was just wild. We were moving out of our house, and we were putting our full trust and faith and dependence on the Lord. And again, every single time in my life that I've been like, God, I'm putting everything on you, that if you don't show up, I'm not gonna make it. Every time, he has always provided. We moved out of our house for those 6 weeks, and our landlord really liked us, and he said, well, I actually have another house that I'm busy cleaning up. Would you like to stay at that house since you're moving out of this house? And we went and looked at it, and we were like, we would love to. And we were paying $850 at the house we were at. And then he said, well, what could you pay for this house? Because I know you're quitting your jobs. And we told him we could pay $600 of rent, so $300 each. So he not only agreed to us paying $600 a month for rent, but he held it for us for the 6 weeks that we were gone. So that way when we got back, we already knew we had a place to live. So God was just so faithful in providing for us. So we go into this mission school in Lake Tahoe, had an amazing time. I ended up meeting my small group leaders. He was from South Africa, she was from America, and at the end of the trip, they said, if you ever want to come to South Africa, you're more than welcome to, because they were moving back there to start their mission program. And so I was like, oh yeah, I mean, I would love to go to South Africa, but for now, I feel like I'm supposed to go back to Kentucky. I feel like I'm supposed to be doing something in Kentucky. So we left mission school, my sister and I moved back to Kentucky, and I started working at Trader Joe's. Again, another place that you could work without going to college, and they actually pay very well. They negotiate if you want to work at Trader Joe's, which I don't always recommend because they were cray cray during 2020, but they do pay well and you can get insurance through them. And so I ended up working there, and for the most part, I would say I enjoyed it. It was, for a job, not a bad job. I ended up becoming friends with a lot of the people there that I would have never become friends with or even probably been friendly with in real life, because we would have just never crossed paths, to the point where there are several of them today that I still connect with every now and then and see how they're doing. So I worked there for, again, a year. And then once the year mark was coming up, I had that feeling again of, I don't think I'm supposed to be here anymore. I think I'm supposed to move on. It was almost like, have you ever had that feeling of holy discomfort of like, I feel like if I stay here, I'm being disobedient to the Lord. I feel the grace period for me to be here is gone. And I should mention also during this time, I was babysitting. Again, that is something that you don't have to go to school for, is to watch people's kids. I am on the fence with being a nanny or a babysitter full time, because I think whenever you're taking the mother role of raising someone else's kids, there's a lot of responsibility, and it almost, because they're not your kids, you can't really raise them like your own. And so for some people, and in my case, this was it often, but it makes you not want to have kids because the kids that you're babysitting are not enjoyable and you really can't discipline them anyways. And so it puts a bad taste in your mouth for motherhood, but that's not real life. You're watching someone else's kids. So sometimes I don't think that's always the best option. Obviously, there are healthier options out there. If you have a wholesome Christian family that is like, here, come watch my kids for 2 hours. And maybe that's a wholesome option, way of making a little bit of extra money and not getting burnt out and thinking that you're not supposed to be a mom because you're not enjoying watching someone else's children. But that's what I did. I watched a family from our church's kids for 2 hours on a Tuesday and Thursday, and that was not bad because it was only 2 hours. The kids were hilarious and fun, and it wasn't terrible. And then also at that time, I was doing freelance graphic design for the seminary that I worked for and the university that I went to. I was doing freelance design for both of them, again, just to make extra money. And then on top of that, I was reffing soccer for the YMCA. So I was doing that as well. Again, I was also wanting to position myself in places where I could possibly meet someone. I played soccer growing up. I knew the game really well. So I thought, well, I could be a ref. I started doing that when I was working at the seminary as a Saturday fun thing. And again, that's something that you don't need to go to school for, is working at the YMCA. That's another thing. If you live near a YMCA and you want to work there, that's an option. You don't have to go to college to do that, and you can make good money working there. And I believe that they're fairly flexible with schedules. At least they were when I had friends that worked there. So those were all the side things that I was doing. But I had that feeling of, okay, something needs to change. And that is the first time in my life that I ever did the five lists thing. I remember sitting in my bed and thinking, okay, if I could do anything in the whole world, what could I do? And I wrote down three of the options were going out of the country. One of them was staying at Trader Joe's. The other one was being a director of activities at a nursing home, because I had experience with working at nursing homes in the past. And so I had actually applied to this nursing home job as the director for activities. I got offered the job, I accepted the job, and as soon as I said yes to that job, my heart sank. It almost felt like I was entering a prison, and it's kind of like sometimes, you know, like you just have to make a decision on something, and then the moment you make a decision, you realize you made the wrong one. That's how I felt. So I immediately, I don't know, 5 minutes later, I called her back and I said, you know what? I don't think I'm supposed to do this. As soon as I said yes, I just have a strong feeling that I'm not supposed to work for you, and I'm so sorry. And she was very kind and considerate, but now I'm back at square one of figuring out what I'm doing. And I do want to mention, when I made that list, I thought to myself, okay, what are the things that I can do in my own strength, and what are the things that only God can do for me? And the things in my own strength were Trader Joe's and the nursing home. The things that only God could do were, I think one was going to Guatemala and learning Spanish and helping, because I had been to Guatemala before and I knew a family that lived there permanently full-time. They would have been happy to for me to come and help with their orphanage and school and learn Spanish. So that was an option. Another option was to go to France, because I knew a girl from my mission school that was in France. I was doing mission stuff there, so that was my other option. And then South Africa was my third option because of my friends that said, if you ever want to come to South Africa, you're more than welcome to. And so once the nursing home thing got shut down, I then was like, okay, started praying about what I'm supposed to do. And then one day, my sister and I were living together at the time. For some reason, we had the Bengals game on. I don't know why. We didn't really watch football at all. I genuinely have no idea why this game was on, but football game was on, it ended, and as it ended, there was this program that came up about people doing work in Africa. And I was bawling my eyes out watching this. And I remembered the quote of, pay attention to the things that make you cry and the things that make you angry, because those are the things that you are passionate about. And I was like, well, this is so interesting. I clearly have a passion for this. And so I started praying, like, God, am I supposed to go to Africa? Specifically South Africa. And then a few days later, I ended up having a dream that I was on this journey and this road, and then I ended up behind the scenes of the stage, and then I opened these like trap doors, and on the other end were my friends that lived in South Africa, and they were waving at me to come. And then that was the end of my dream. And I was like, I feel like God is speaking to me. So then a few days later, I ended up going to this church that I ended up going to actually, but at this time I wasn't really committed to going to this church. It was kind of new. We had known people who were there, and I went by myself, and behind me there was a man sitting that I had met a few years earlier, because my friends and I, we went praying in a hospital for people, and we ended up praying for this man's wife's grandfather in the hospital, and that's how I met this guy years prior. And this man ended up being a very influential Christian man in this city, and so he happened to be sitting behind me in that same church, also wasn't a member of them at the time, just visiting. So after the service, he was like, Kelly! And I couldn't believe it, because I think we had maybe seen each other at a prayer event one other time since I had seen him and his wife at the hospital. And so he's like, immediately he asked me, what country's on your heart? And I was like, well, South Africa. And he's like, okay, cool. He's like, are you gonna go? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, what do you mean you don't know? And I was like, I don't know. I guess I don't have the money, and it would be out of my comfort zone. And my sister, she would have to find a roommate. And he was like, okay, well, give God 2 months to provide you the money, and he will. And it's always a good thing to get out of your comfort zone and trust that God will provide your sister a roommate. And that was it. That was the end of the conversation. It was done. And I had a lot to ponder on after that conversation, thinking, God, do you want me to go to South Africa? I feel like it has become crystal clear that this is what I'm supposed to do. Now I just need to reach out to my friends and see if they even have an opportunity for me to come. I remember even being in my living room, pulling up Facebook in the messaging app to message my friends, and we had Chromecast on our TV at the time, and so it showed different images, and one of the images that came up in that moment was a landscape scenery in South Africa. I actually took a picture of it at that time, so I could always remember, but again, I felt like God was continually directing my steps. And so I messaged them, and I, in my mind, thought February. 2 months from now would be February. That would give me the 2 months I need to give God the time to provide me the money. But I was like, I don't want to tell them that I'm thinking February, because it's up to them. Whatever they want to do, I can't control when they would accept me coming out. And I knew it would be for 3 months, because I knew that that was the visa timeline of an American being in South Africa. And so I reached out to them, and then they got back to me and they said, we would love to have you. We're going to have interns, mission interns, come out starting the beginning of February. And I could not believe it. I was like, February was literally what I had in mind, and they literally responded February, and I didn't even have to tell them. So again, God continually being faithful with directing my steps. He provided the money within 1 month. I was selling journals, and a lot of people bought journals, and then there was a man from my church that ended up pretty much paying for my whole trip, and he hardly knew me. It was just a huge financial blessing. God put it on his heart to give me a specific amount of money, and ended up being more than the money that I needed, and it was a huge blessing. So God not only provided for me to go, but I gave him 2 months and he provided in 1 month. He blessed my sister with a roommate, one of our friends, who when I came back to America, I ended up living with all three of them during Scott and I's engagement season. So our rent went down from 300 to 200 each, which again was a huge blessing. And then getting out of my comfort zone was a good thing. So I ended up going to South Africa, flying there by myself, and again, I think this is when it comes down to there is wisdom in doing things. There is, God does give us practical wisdoms. And then there are times when we are to walk by faith and not by sight and trust that He's the one directing our steps and making a way. And I feel like that was me going to South Africa, and I went there, again, just being faithful. I loved it. I had an amazing time there. It was life-changing. And my second to last week there, I am at a family's house for dinner. It was me, there was a few other interns that I became really good friends with, and then Josh and Rachel are the mission leaders that I was friends with from the mission school. And Josh had mentioned often saying, my friend is coming, he's gonna come visit us, but it kept getting delayed, postponed, and he was really talking up this guy. And so finally, this night, April 18th, 2016, I'm at this family's tropical backyard, and in comes this guy with long hair, Tarzan looking hair, very tall, and with a giant smile on his face, and I thought, this is the friend that he's been mentioning. He's here. And you know when you like someone, you have this like, okay, I definitely could be interested in him, but I'm leaving in a few weeks, and I do not want to show that I'm interested in him because I do not want to freak him out by being an American girl that is interested in him. So he actually came up to me, we greeted each other, talked, and then he went and talked to other people and I went and talked to someone else. And then we sat down for dinner. He was like diagonally from me, but two people over. The host of the party, the woman, she had asked him, she said, so are you dating anyone? And I tried to like play it super chill, but I was like, I'm interested in hearing, is he dating anyone? And he was like, no, I'm intentionally single. I'm just pursuing the Lord right now. And I was like, noted, not interested in dating anyone. And I am going to start using that line from now on because I like that, intentionally single. I'm not desperate. I'm intentionally single while also journaling nearly every day, praying for my future husband. But I do want to pause the story there and say there is power in praying for your future husband. And if you don't do anything else, if you don't take any other piece of advice from anything that I ever say, if you're single, pray for your future husband. God will honor that, and I have seen that in my own life of prayers answered, promises fulfilled, to the point where this was April 18th, 2016. April 17th, 2011, I am at Asbury University. This all ties together, but I'm going to show you how faithful God is. The Asbury was having some once a year, I think it was called Highbridge or something, where guys would ask the girls out on these dates to go to this performance or plays or something. And no one asked me to go or my friends. So it was fine. We all went together, had a great time. But I went back to my dorm room that night and I remember sitting in front of the mirror and being so sad and thinking, I just really want to be married. That's all that I want. I just want to be married. And I said to God, God, when am I going to meet my future husband? Almost out of frustration. And in my mind, immediately, 5 years. And I was like, 5 years? There is no ways. I'm not going to wait 5 years. That is way too long. And I don't think that was from you, God. That was April 17th, 2011. Fast forward 5 years in one day, I met Scott. April 18th, 2016, and I knew it on that day. I knew it was the 5 year and one day mark that Sunday, because it was a Monday, and so that Sunday when it came around, I thought, wow, 5 years, who would have thought I would be in South Africa on this 5 year mark? And then in comes Scott the next day, walking in saying that he is intentionally single. So that whole week, I pretty much avoided him like the plague. He would come up and try talking to me several times. One of my friends that was also an intern there, the first day I was sitting on the tire playing with the kids. Because what I was doing there was, it was called Stony Drift, and it was a rubbish dump where, yeah, they dumped rubbish, but there was a community that lived within the rubbish dump that used the rubbish to make houses. And so Josh and Rachel started a preschool in there and a soup kitchen. And so basically my role was helping with the preschool, which I loved so much. It was very dirty. It was hard. I saw worms. I saw death. I saw murder. I saw sickness, poverty, everything you could imagine that's like not ideal was there. And still, I loved helping. I loved being there. I loved serving. I loved the children so much. I liked learning the language. And so I would always play with the kids every chance that I got. And the one day that Scott was there, I was playing on this tire with one of the little boys, Angolaka, and Scott came over and sat next to me. And I remember being so nervous because I really thought he was attractive. But again, I didn't want to be weird, especially if he was intentionally single. So I kept small talk super small. There was another time where he went around and Scott did, and he asked all the interns of, well, what are you passionate about? And I remember thinking, okay, I want to be mysterious. I do not want to give myself away to this guy that I don't know and that clearly does not want to be in a relationship with me. So when it came to me, he was like, Kelly, what are you passionate about? I was like, I just love God and I love people. And that was it. Like, cold as ice. And that was pretty much my whole week with him. Was very cold. I was pleasant. I smiled. I was playful with the kids. But as far as my interaction with him went, I just did not want to create an idea in my mind of something that wasn't real. And so I really just played it chill. And I was like, you know what? My focus is to be with these kids. I think this guy's great. At the end of the week, though, I've been around him long enough to see his character, and he blew me away. He would open doors for us. We went to a worship night where all of the men would always sit on the couches, and the girls would sit on the floor, and we walk in. He was sitting on a couch. As soon as the girls walk in, he got up, and he sat on the floor. That stood out to me. He was always helpful of like, oh, can I make drinks? Can I do this? And that stood out to me. And I just was really even more attracted to him the more I got to know him. Seeing him interact with the kids and playing with the kids, I couldn't help but like him. And I was texting my sister the whole time, telling her about him, because I was like, I really like him. But I didn't want to get my hopes up. So I didn't know this, but he ended up staying an extra day to try to talk to me. I just thought he was always going to stay until Saturday, but the plan for him originally, before he met me, was to leave on the Friday. He ended up delaying it an extra day, and that extra day, we all went cliff jumping. And so we go to this spot, and so you kind of have to hike a distance to get to this spot where you jump off the cliffs. And we are walking there. Every time he comes up to me to start talking, someone would come in between us and interrupt, and it constantly felt like we were getting interrupted. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this. Like, if it doesn't work out for us to have a conversation, because at this point I was like, if he talks to me, I'm going to talk to him back because I like him. But it just would not work. We do the cliff jumping thing, which we both agree we would never do again. We were doing it both to impress each other. At the end of the night, Scott was going to leave the next morning, so he said bye to all of us interns. And I remember him saying, maybe I'll see you again someday. And that was it. That's all he said. And I thought, any guy who liked me would not just say, maybe I'll see you again someday. And so that was it. He left. I went into the house that I was staying at, and I went into my room, and I thought to myself, I blew it. God, my biggest fear was missing out on my future husband, and I think I just blew it. I avoided him this whole week. And I remember also saying, I don't think I'm ever gonna meet anyone else likes Scott, and if I do, I think I'm just going to compare him to Scott. And I was so devastated, and I knew he was going to a mission school in California, and I knew someone else who was going to that mission school, and I thought, he's going to marry her, and I was so upset. And I was like, you know what? This is just infatuation. I'll wake up the next morning, and I'll be over it. And the next morning, I was not over it. I was even more convinced that I blew it. And so I was like, you know what? I need to talk to Josh and Rachel, and they can tell me that he didn't like me to begin with, and I can go back to America and forget that he ever existed. So the next day after that, Rachel had said to me, hey, Kelly, do you want to get lunch? And I thought, this is perfect. We will go and get lunch together and I'll tell her everything. And so that's what we did. We went and got lunch and I told her everything. I said I liked him. I told her about the 5 years thing. I told her everything. And the whole time she was like, And then finally she's like, Kelly, he really liked you. You just avoided him all week. And I was like, he did? He liked me? And I was like, well, now what? He's gone. He lived 10 hours away. So he drove 10 hours down to visit. And then when he left, he drove 10 hours back home. And I was like, I'm leaving in a week. It was then 6 days. I was like, I'm leaving in a week. And he lives 10 hours away. Now what? And she was like, well, I'm sure he'll send you a Facebook message. So that was it. I didn't know this, but I'll go ahead and share it now. Scott had saw Josh and Rachel a few months prior to me coming out, and Josh had said to Scott, your wife is coming. I know who your wife is. And Scott's like, oh no, I don't think so. And kind of blew off the whole thing. And he said he had totally forgot about that whole thing, that Josh had even said that, until he had come down to visit and he remembered Josh saying that. But there's more to his story, which I'll get to in a second. So then that was a Monday. Tuesday goes by, I don't hear anything. Wednesday goes by, I don't hear anything. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, like, everyone seems excited that I like Scott and apparently he likes me, but nothing's happening. He hasn't sent me a Facebook message, and the odds of him driving 10 hours back down is slim to none. So that Thursday, I ended up waking up feeling terrible. I felt so sick. I ended up going to Stony Drift, working at the rubbish dump all day with the kids, and you get dirty working there. The kids hang all over you, they play with your hair, they pull on you. You're covered in dust, and it smells like smoke because there's always fire there. Like, I've shared this story before and people get really offended by me saying it's disgusting. I'm not saying South Africa as a whole is disgusting. I'm saying where I was working was disgusting. It was dirty. The environment was not good. It was not pleasant. So I would leave every day and get a shower because it was so bad. And for some reason, the only day that I did not get a shower after Stony Drift was this day. I felt so sick. I came home, I laid on the bed, and I didn't even change. And Josh called me and he said, okay, since you're leaving soon, we're gonna take you out to a dinner tonight. And I was like, okay, cool. I was like, you know what? They sell me like this all day. He's gonna come here in a little bit and pick me up. It's fine, no big deal. He comes and picks me up, takes me back to their house. I walk in and Rachel was like, oh, she's like, you didn't change. And I was like, no, I didn't feel good. And literally not picking up on anything happening. So they're like, well, let's go have coffee out on the back patio. So I walk out to the back patio and there is Scott with this huge bouquet of flowers. And it was so awkward. Like, obviously I was pumped about seeing him, but we had not talked at all about him liking me or me liking him. And then Josh and Rachel are standing there like so excited. And so, and then, yeah, of course I am wearing my disgusting, dirty, smelly clothes. And thankfully Rachel gave me a change of clothes for the evening. And we ended up going out on a date to the beach, and we walked the beach and then we got dinner. But immediately when I got into the car, we were both like, what happened last week? What went on? And I wanted to hear from his perspective. And he had told me that 3 weeks prior to meeting me, he told God that he was going to be committed to being single for a year. So he was internally battling with this commitment that he made to the Lord that he would be single for the next year. And it was either 8 months or a year. It was going to be for the entire time he was at this mission school, because he said, God, I know that going to this mission school, there will be a lot of girls and I don't want to be distracted, so I'm going to focus on you. And then he met me and was interested and was dealing with this inward battle. And then he told me that's why he stayed the extra day, was to get to talk to me, but he couldn't tell if I liked him or not. So then his whole drive home, which was 10 hours, he was praying and asking God what to do. And he felt like God said to him, what would you do if you were fearless? And he thought, if I were fearless, I would go back, talk to Kelly, and say I want to pursue her. So he called Josh and he said, okay, I'm coming back. I'm gonna talk to Kelly about pursuing her. And Josh was like, we don't even know if Kelly likes you. You're gonna drive 10 hours and to talk to her and you could get turned down. So that was why Rachel asked to meet up with me, was because Scott was already planning on coming down without knowing where I was, and they wanted to make sure he wasn't wasting a trip or embarrassing himself. So obviously, I was so excited. This was my first boyfriend. I was 25 years old, never had a boyfriend, never even been on a date. And here I was having my first date with my husband in South Africa on the beach. And that was Thursday, and I was flying out Monday morning. So we had 4 days to talk about everything. Over those course of 4 days, we talked about everything. He made clear to me that he wanted to date me with the intention of marrying me, that he would want to meet my family. So yeah, we talked about everything those next 4 days, and all of our values were in complete alignment. We talked about marriage, and we did have borrowed trust. We had mutual friends that knew both of us separately. So it's not like we were two total strangers that didn't have any, you know, borrowed trust from anyone else. Josh and Rachel, they knew us. They could call us out if we were lying, faking it, being deceitful. So obviously that was very helpful and helped us with making decisions. Long story short, I went home. Scott came over. That was beginning of May. Scott came over in July, and we were married the beginning of November. I started 2016, never having had a boyfriend, to being married by the end of the year. So you never know the and suddenlies of God. You never know what things you decide to do in this season will be how God directs your steps in future seasons. Had I not quit my job at the seminary to go to this mission school in Lake Tahoe, I would have never met Josh and Rachel. Had I never met Josh and Rachel, I would have never went to South Africa. I would have never met Scott had I had those other things God not directed my steps with. So that is the importance of praying in every season about everything that you're doing. That's the importance of just not willy-nilly just doing whatever the culture tells you to do and going along with it. Of course God can direct our steps. Of course God makes all things work together for our good. I did go to college and God still directed my steps even there. He is so good and he's so faithful. But will we put our trust in him? Will we become dependent upon him and trust that he is faithful in directing our steps as we yield to him? But we must yield to him. We can't just keep doing the ways of the world without thinking of him or asking him, God, is this where I'm supposed to be? Am I doing what you want me to be doing? Am I at the right place? And be open to him directing your steps differently. Search my heart, O Lord. Having the posture of asking God to search your heart and to direct your steps. Proverbs 16:9 says, a man makes a plan in his heart, but it's the Lord who directs his steps. So make a plan in your heart and see how God directs your steps. And so I hope this has been encouraging to you, for those of you who are single, that you can start asking God if there's a place you should go, a way you should change your scenery, change your environments. Where is there a possibility that you need to go somewhere? And you never know how being at this certain place might introduce you to this certain person. Be open to the Holy Spirit directing your steps. So I hope that this testimony was encouraging for you, no matter the season of life that you're in, that God is faithful and he is worthy of all of our trust. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you.